Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com, part of the CBS Sports Radio Network. I am Mike Casazza, welcoming in Chris Anderson. Chris, I don't know about you. I'm old enough to remember when West Virginia and Virginia Tech was an annual matchup, and it's been 16 years, which is older than your kids, since they were last year. It's been 4 years since they last played, which is far too long. Are you going to be able to do this today?
Yeah, I think I am. I can't believe when he was talking about it, when Neil Brown was talking about that, trying to educate the players and everything. I guess I never really put the math together on some of that, but it was true. So a lot of those guys on both rosters, not just West Virginia, but Virginia Tech too, kind of need a rehash of what this rivalry is, because most of them were not in grade school. Many of them were in diapers the last time, you know, West Virginia and Tech were truly playing year after year.
Neil Brown was a fresh-faced wide receivers coach at Delaware the last time they played in Morgantown. How about that?
A youngin'.
Very. And by my count here, West Virginia has three players who played against Virginia Tech. I'm not even sure they played. We're on the roster. X-Ray Lowe, Evan Staley, and Sean Mahone. So, again, that's not too long ago, but that's the type of space you've had in this. Like, it was like an annual thing, obviously, but people came to school because they wanted to play, not just against Virginia Tech, but, like, wanted to play Virginia Tech. Or, without fail, there was some familiarity. You know, the offensive lineman knew the defensive lineman, the receivers knew the defensive back, so on and so forth. And you just don't see a lot of that right now. Although they do recruit against each other quite a bit, but you don't have familiarity about, oh, the last time you played them, we were able to do this, or, you know, I got past this guy because of this. None of that stuff exists anymore. So here's to creating new memories, because this will come back quickly and then go away quickly. A limited series return game will be in Blacksburg, and then who knows how long this goes on hiatus. So, hey, might as well enjoy this one. To what degree are you looking forward to this? I don't know. As the capital J journalist, as the fan of college football, as the pundit who thinks he knows about West Virginia, but it's probably going to learn a lot on Saturday.
I don't know if I can answer that middle one. I think we've made pretty clear I'm not a capital J journalist over here. That's your role, Michael. That's your role for this thing we got going on here. But it's big. I like games, one, as a fan of the college football. I love games where the fans and the schools kind of, sort of, truly don't like each other. I mean, I know we talked about this before with the Maryland thing, and somebody asked me about Maryland's Twitter account poking fun at WV after the game, and I was like, I don't have a problem with it. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what makes college football great, is that you talk trash, you live, you enjoy the wins, the losses suck, and you really kind of hate certain teams. You don't like certain teams. You want to beat certain teams more than others. So the idea that West Virginia is getting back to playing some of those games, I enjoy it. I really do, as a fan of college football. I love to see those kind of rivalry games, the ones where regional rivals, fans don't like each other. So that's a big one. And as somebody who covers West Virginia, this is, I know people have asked and we've joked about it and we kind of said it was true, but this is the biggest game of Neil Brown's career, and not just because it's, quote, the next one. It is the biggest one, like, by a fairly good margin, I think, at least so far in his young career at West Virginia.
Yeah, I don't think there's any conversation about that. You're not, I know you like to go out on limbs, but you could trampoline this limb, I think. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. Non-conference game, absolutely. Conference game, I think he circled, like, Texas game a couple of years ago, at least for a crowd or an atmosphere. I mean, they haven't been on the field really with Oklahoma. I mean, literally just one time. They weren't on the field last year. And then just in a weird spot against, you know, Iowa State 2 years ago. Again, didn't really play well last year. And then, I don't know, the Tony Gibson revenge game didn't really get a lot of people going in 2019. At Missouri, his second game. I'm looking at, like, opponents here and times where the team was ranked, and you just don't see a lot of it. And frankly, you could have had some ranked opponents or some familiar opponents, but this one's just going to be bigger because of who it is. Not many teams they played more often than Virginia Tech, Pitt, Penn State, Syracuse, Maryland just by one game. So this will draw even. That's how frequent this is. And another reason it's big is that the opportunities to play a lot of these rivals from the past are fleeting now because of the way schedules are. So this is kind of a cool thing where Maryland, Virginia Tech, next year is what, at Pitt, at Virginia Tech, then Pitt, Penn State. By the way, at Pitt, at Virginia Tech next year. Yeah, Pitt, Penn State coming up. But then, like, the soonest you can get Maryland or Virginia Tech or is 2029 probably. Who knows what the conferences look like and how many non-conference games you have. Might have room for one more. Who knows? Might not have a chance. Maybe they're playing 10 conference games. But you just don't get a lot of these. And not to put a whole lot on either round, but year three, climbing, lose at Maryland, lose at home to Virginia Tech. These are opponents that the fans really want to see you play. They've been clamoring for them. And, you know, these schedules take a lot of time to take action, and you know, you put them on paper so many years in advance, and the time comes and you like to enjoy them, and if you're not winning them, that's a big one. So yeah, winning would be great, but losing after losing to Maryland, that wouldn't be very good either. And then, you know, they do run into each other in recruiting, similar to Maryland. They're going to play each other next year. That trophy, Neil Brown has calculated the number of days it's been in Blacksburg, which is probably some type of weaponry for his team and motivation. A whole lot feels better if they win. And here's the weird part, Chris. I mean, not much feels better. Nothing feels better if you lose. But the folks I've talked to off the line are like, well, what's different if they lose? They just haven't been able to get and keep their head above water. And that was a reality I hadn't really considered. I don't know if that makes sense. But if they don't lose, or if they don't win the game, if they lose, does that change a lot of things? And I hadn't thought about that. Does that make sense?
It kind of does. And isn't that bad? Sad?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, you know, that losing this game and falling to 1-2, losing two rivalry games, falling to 1-2 with 1-3 staring you square in the face, doesn't change anything. I think that's not a good spot you want to be in as a program.
Whereas if you're 2-0 and you lose, man, you know, felt like we were reaching that apex, guys, and that's a bummer. But, you know, reset a little bit. But I hadn't really thought about that. You know, cause when you think about 5-7 and 6-4 felt okay, I think, when you look at finishing with a bowl game, but not competitive in the conference, not nearly as competitive as they want to be in the conference, I should say. And that just struck me as, you know, everybody's very excited about this game and so much is on the line if they win. Well, conversely, the reality is, like you said, it's kind of an unfortunate thing, or if they don't win, it's just kind of like, oh man, here we go again. Another one of these meddling middle of the pack seasons. I don't know. That'd be tough. I guess you could pick yourself up and stun Oklahoma. And has Oklahoma looked impenetrable so far? I don't know, Tulane might say no. And then the can of soup they beat last week would probably say yes, but that's nothing to worry about right now. I think it's great, like you said, too. It's cool for fans to be back and to have one that you look forward to. They lost the Maryland home game last year because of the pandemic, in addition to the Florida State neutral site game. But losing a home game against Maryland, that's still one of those things that fans look forward to. So being able to get it back and have it here, especially looking next year at Pitt, at Virginia Tech, you really got to capitalize on these things. And I would imagine that 60-plus thousand people will be amped up and make it work. Which leads me to this crowd, all the ancillary stuff about atmosphere, ambiance. Tech hasn't played particularly well on the road recently under their coach, period. They haven't played a true road game in forever either. Attendance extremely limited last year and they weren't good on the road. How valuable do you think that is? And to what extent does that play into perhaps West Virginia -3?
I think it's a big factor. I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons that West Virginia is favored. I know we've discussed that typical home field advantage is like 3 points. So basically Vegas is saying it's a pick 'em. I think it might be more than that just because of the extenuating circumstances here of Tech never really going on the road, struggling on the road. There's a good chance that this could be one of the rowdiest crowds, even if it is a noon game, in a long time. I think last week you know, it wasn't full capacity, which I don't think anybody's expecting after a disappointing season opening loss. And then you play Long Island University, but it was almost like a warm up for the fans to kind of just get them back used to, here's a full capacity stadium. Here's how this goes. Here's how the people handing out tickets and scanning passes and doing all that stuff to get into the stadium. It was like a warm up for everybody. And this has a chance to be a sold out crowd with that. That's just really ready to go.
Did you know if they win the game, they get into the ACC? Just like the LSU game so many years ago.
Absolutely.
A lot of circumstances can resolve themselves here. Get off the schneid, beat Virginia Tech, get the trophy back, and hey, you're in the ACC, you take care of yourself. All we need is the Hokies plane spotted at the airport sometime.
There you go.
Just to make it official.
Call up your boy Whit. Mm-hmm. Whit Babcock. Yeah. There you go.
Got him on speed dial here. Upon pouring through the stats, I don't know how much tape you consume, Chris. I watched a UNC game, but I sped through the Middle Tennessee game. Watch a lot of stuff that, I don't know, it does and doesn't look familiar. It's the defense, man, the defense is Bud Foster's defense. The offense is probably like the old Memphis, maybe even old TCU defenses with Justin Fuente. Special teams, one side really good, one side, we'll see. But this kind of feels like the old Tech in the sense of the defense, the new Tech in the sense of it's 2021 and everybody runs some variation of this offense. And Fuente was really good at it, like I said, at TCU and Memphis too. But to see this type of Virginia Tech coming in where it's not a quarterback who's going to run around, they're not running option, things like that. Wait a minute, they do have a quarterback who runs around. They do run some read stuff. And it kind of feels like what's old is new here. Your impressions watching them and getting to know them again?
Yeah, the offensive thing stood out to me. I mean, I didn't catch much of the Middle Tennessee State game. I did go back and catch it after the fact when I was doing my three key matchups piece. But the UNC one, I watched the entire thing. And the first thing that stood out to me in that game was that I felt like Virginia Tech won in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Yep. I thought they were getting excellent push on offense. And I thought they were getting into the backfield on defense. That offense, it's strange. You know, they had some options at quarterback in the offseason. They had three, I believe it was three different quarterbacks that had FBS starting experience or at least game experience. Mm-hmm. And kind of settled on Burmeister again, who has been kind of the guy, kind of around. And he provides something different than what those other guys did. And he is that kind of running quarterback. He's not a big deep threat. One of the keys in my matchup piece is going to talk about his depth of target. He's one of the worst. I guess it's worst is relative. He's one of the lowest, one of the shortest throwers in all of college football. Out of like 128 eligible quarterbacks, he ranked 111th on depth of target. He only throws it downfield. Like, I think it goes over 10 yards, like one out of three attempts. That's it. Mm-hmm. So West Virginia can kind of, if you can contain them, I think my first takeaway, and it's going to be part of that piece that I wrote, is contain and tackle. Like, they're not going to hit you for the 70-yard pass like Maryland. I don't think they do have the athletes. Maybe they don't have the quarterback that can hit that 60, 70-yard gain. The running back's going to break out a 50-yarder like that. They're going to be the team that's going to kill you by 1,000, a 1,000 cuts, death by 1,000 cuts, get a 10-yard gain here, throw a 3-yard pass that turns into a 12-yard gain there, and so on.
How much did they miss their tight end? James Mitchell, all conference, going to be an NFL player, tore an ACL. By the way, after the game, Justin Fuente, who by my perception is not a favorite among people who cover the team. No one's ever told me this, but I just watch him at distance, and I think that there are some things that he does that probably bothers the media. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I saw that.
He could have gone back in the game. He'll be fine. Meanwhile, he tore his ACL. He's out for the year. He's probably not going to play at Tech anymore, so farewell to him. But that's a big chess piece there, especially all the two tight end stuff they use, too. I imagine they'll miss him quite a bit. And if you're West Virginia, that's great news because the tight end does seem to get you every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very often that a team can lose somebody who's played, the equivalent of basically two full seasons as a starter and still be okay. And he is an integral part of that offense. Even if he's not catching it all the time, just having to account for him on defense. Because there are, to be quite honest, teams that you play that have a tight end, quote unquote, and you do not have to worry about them. Like, you know, they're there to block and they're not going to do much else. This is not one of those. This is a guy that can really hurt you if you do not account for him on every play.
They have three receivers who've caught a pass this year, three wide receivers. Trey Turner is kind of their big play guy. He's going to get a lot of the attention. Caleb Smith has three catches, no yards after the catch. The one that concerns me, I think, if I'm watching, is Tavion Robinson. That's a four-star guy from a couple years ago. 2019 All-America honors for freshman. Dangerous punt returner, leading receiver last year. I think that Turner gets a lot of the attention, but Tavion Robinson's a guy that can do a whole bunch of things there. Hands it off sometimes. Punt returns, obviously can stretch the field a little bit, but what use of these weapons vertically if everything is contained? Do you think West Virginia pinches down to contain this stuff and make sure that they can get downhill and make tackles or get outside and make tackles? Because I believe Maryland was 14 for 14 on screen passes against West Virginia. That's concerning. and that's a lot of what you mentioned. The depth of target is not impressive, but that's also what they do. It seems like they're setting Burmeister up for success, but that may be setting up West Virginia's defense for failure. Do you stay back and run up and tackle? Do you play tight and hope that they don't change their stripes and go over your head? What is your tactic if you are Jordan Leslie, Shadon Brown?
I think you have to go with that look that seemed to work well for most of the Maryland game, which was the four rushers and seven dropping back, because one, I think you can get pressure with four. I think West Virginia can. If it's the right four, I think they can get it most of the time, especially if they rotate in and keep guys fresh. But I just keep contain on things and try to make Burmeister hit all those short passes, because you're right, they love the screen pass just like Maryland. A third, you know how I said one third of their passes are over nine yards? I mean, just 10 yards is a third, and everything past that. One third of their passes are behind the line of scrimmage. Like, they are very, I don't want to say predictable, but that is something that they do, and they do it well. But if you lay back and if you don't go into, you know, blitzing all the time, you can kind of snuff those out and then force Burmeister to kind of try to find something else to do, which is hard to do when it's a plan screen. But his stats aren't great down the field. He doesn't complete a lot. I think he was only like 2 of 13 or something over 20 yards. So if you can kind of just bring those safeties, those back safeties in just a little bit, and I don't want to call it's weird. It's like a short prevent defense. Mike, you know the technical terms here. What am I trying to describe here as far as the defense goes?
A short prevent is new to me.
Not rushing the quarterback, but you are, your safeties are not 25 yards down the field. They are 15 yards down the field, kind of coming up, creeping up a little bit, because basically everything they run is a short pass.
Mm-hmm. Rally to the ball, then, I would guess. Big day. Yeah. For, I don't know, it could be the Bandit, could be Scotty Young, could be Jackie Matthews, who played a lot of slot, extra defensive back there, too. Burmeister's deep number so far this year, 3 for 6 deep. One on the left, one in the middle, one on the right, and then just 2 for 8 between 10 and 20 yards. Everything else, like you said, is inside. Quick stuff, get it out. And I don't know why, because their offensive line looks spicy. Like, they get after people. Their left tackle is 6'9", 330 pounds, all plus 310. They move around a little bit. They can roll some guys in, and they run the ball pretty consistently, where you think play action might pop in or RPO might pop in too. But that might be something there too, that they're just going to have to continue to do what they do and see if West Virginia just lets them gobble up what's there. Does West Virginia get aggressive and try to contest some of those routes and play it tighter? Don't know. It's going to be, again, a good part of the chess match there, too. One thing I do want to mention, this will lead into another conversation. They played three quarterbacks against Middle Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Two in your traditional / non-traditional, but the third one who came in was not the non-traditional quarterback. Burmeister got hit up high. I believe it was a targeting penalty, too. And was clearly wobbled and came out, and then they brought in like number 2B, I think. I'm not even sure. And he played the drive out, and they scored a touchdown on the drive. And then he finished the game later when it was 35-7, I believe. So in between Burmeister and Knox Kadem, they used the transfer from Texas A&M, big guy, Connor Blumrick, and he runs like wildcat stuff and option stuff too. Didn't pass it, but three carries, 38 yards, had a 33-yard run on like a gadget play where he took the snap, rolled right, and faked the pitch and kept it. He also scored a touchdown. And like I said, that wildcat goal line set, they get him into the red zone and they bring him in. That's something to watch about too. I'll transition here in a minute, but boy, there's a way to play two quarterbacks without completely changing your offense, but that's something you have to worry about too. Outside the 20s, maybe it's the Burmeister show, but inside the 20, you're going to probably look at some dose of Connor Blumrick, who's a bigger guy and runs it really well. One of those three quarterbacks you said with starting experience too, but they do some gadgety stuff too. So they'll run some reverses. I'm not saying that they'll run a double pass, but certainly that's in their repertoire. They're running all this quick stuff and they suck you in too. This plan could work on offense, but it largely has to work if they're going to run the ball too. Like, I mean, they can break through and get some alleys if they're going to play. You know, if they have to go outside to cover the quick stuff, I'm speaking of the defense, then there's going to be space in the middle, that offensive line. And their success rushing the ball so far this year, 39 carries, 224 yards, 5.7 a pop, four touchdowns against Middle Tennessee. And then what was really successful against North Carolina, keep away, 43 carries, 127 yards. But they had a 10-minute edge in time of possession, too. They played fast, they played slow, but they've done it because they've been able to run the ball.
I'm just trying to picture this guy. I mean, I went back and watched the Middle Tennessee State game after the fact, but this is not your typical – I'm talking about Blumrick there. That's not your typical wildcat quarterback. I mean, he is 6'5", 6'6", like 220-some pounds. Not a small guy that's kind of pushing through there and trying to get runs for Virginia Tech.
Do you remember the tight end for Cincinnati who would take the direct snaps and was their wildcat quarterback when Brian Kelly was the head coach there?
No, who's that?
Travis Kelce.
Oh, yeah.
Similar thing here. I'm not sure how much of a passing threat this guy is, but he's a hammer down by that goal line. And then they put him in the middle of the field, fake a reverse. He turned the corner and he ran away from people, got 33 yards. So you're going to have your eyes on who's at the quarterback. I'm not sure how much Knox Kadem will play. But they certainly don't have a problem handing in the keys. They did twice, once in the normal course of action, once at the end of the game there too. So listen, they're tricky with the run game. They have two, three running backs they really like. Big offensive line too. You've looked at these matchups here. How do you feel about their offensive line against the defensive line? And by the way, Fuente had really, really complimentary things to say about West Virginia's defensive front led by Mesidor and Dante Stills, but does like their linebackers too.
Sorry about that, Mike. Lost my microphone for a second. Can you say that again?
More talking for me?
Yeah, sorry. I lost your audio there while you were talking because my microphone got pulled out. Sorry.
The matchup in the trenches here, as you said, the Virginia Tech has won that in both games, probably on both sides too, but they've been able to run the ball a number of different running backs. Probably about even. They like them. The carries are about even too. But big offensive line, some experience. They play a redshirt freshman. Everybody else has a lot of starts. However, Justin Fuente, highly complimentary of West Virginia's defensive line, Dante Stills, Akeem Mesidor, a lot of their movements before and after the snap, and he likes their linebackers too. How does this match up down there?
It's going to be a tough one for West Virginia because I was going through that. This is one of the first things that I feel like we talk about a lot, we look at is the matchups and where teams like to run. They like to run inside, outside, left, right, whatever it is, or where's a weakness on the offensive line. And Tech's kind of strong all the way around, up and down that line. You look at their pass blocking, and they have, I think it was four of the five starters have a PFF grade above like 70, like, mm-hmm. You know, and 65 is the above average mark. So it's not that's pretty darn high. And then the fifth one, Smith, I believe his name, the left guard, is not as highly rated in pass blocking, but was much better in run blocking. So you're not really finding many weaknesses on that offensive line for Virginia Tech. So West Virginia might have to get tricky with how they want to get in and around that group up front to try to get pressure.
Flip the script here. Let's go West Virginia's offense, Virginia Tech's defense. Let's just talk about the quarterbacks. There is a great clip of they asked Fuente about Daigie, and the first 5 seconds are, well, and then basically remembers the family because he was at TCU and I'm sure that he had some role in playing against a Daigie, recruiting a Daigie, but he puts that connection together and then goes on about how they have highly productive players on the outside and their passing game has been good and they have explosive parts of the offense. So maybe Fuente hasn't watched film yet. I'm not sure. But the big question here is how much will Daigie do? How much can Daigie do? Those are different questions that are perhaps attached. And then how do you get Garrett Green in? Neil Brown says you have to be committed to a plan and have it going in. That means maybe third series could be something like that. It's very different from what I've explained and you saw and I saw about how Virginia Tech used their three quarterbacks, two basically, against Middle Tennessee. Even though when one quarterback went out, quarterback 2B came in, but like they used the actual running quarterback in different spots in the field. They have a plan. It's many plans here too. The more I've thought about this, Chris, I don't know if I can accept Green not playing because there's a way to do it and not throw everything off the rails.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I think, I mean, I've been on this, we've been doing this for a couple weeks now, saying we think he should play. But on top of that, I mean, the stats say he should play. You look at the first couple of weeks, it's pretty small sample size, but scrambling quarterbacks, which was basically just Howell in the first game for North Carolina, had success. You look back at their stats last year, had success.
Yeah.
Teams that had a quarterback who scrambled, which PFF defines as, you know, however they define it, they are averaging 6, 7, 8 yards per quarterback scramble, while you're not getting as many yards in your more traditional runs. And, you know, Howell, I think, had 50-some yards scrambling as a quarterback in week one. Middle Tennessee State didn't really scramble any. I think they had one for like 2 yards or something. But that is an area where Virginia Tech's defense is vulnerable. I think it's in part because they are so relentless with their rush, with their push up front, and also because they run hey, key word here, everybody loves this word, multiple defense, everybody loves that, but it's kind of a 4-2-5 in their traditional, their base set, and you got the five DBs, and that fifth DB doesn't play in the box as much as I think you would see when West Virginia was running basically a 4-2-5 as well. So there is some space to run if you can elude that initial pass rush. And that's where scrambling mobile quarterbacks like a Mr. Garrett Green find success against Virginia Tech.
And you watched the game, so did I. Middle Tennessee used three quarterbacks. Bailey Hockman starts for them, doesn't run a whole lot. They have two other guys that they put in that had them run plays. Chase Cunningham, he ran some offense in place of Hockman, but ran the ball. And then they actually, two different wrinkles here. They used Shaitan Mobley as like a wildcat quarterback. They would bring him in. He got a couple handoffs and ran and did some things there. He's 6'3", 232 pounds. They also used like another gadget quarterback, Mike Diliello. He's their gadget quarterback, they called him. One carry, 17 yards. I'm wondering if they saw the same thing and went for it, because they're going to have to create some advantages in Middle Tennessee. I'm not saying that West Virginia is Middle Tennessee, but West Virginia's running game is not great right now. It needs to create advantages. And I just think that if you have him out there, it's another person you have to account for in the running game. Defenses don't typically account for the running, but excuse me, the quarterback, especially Jarrett Dagey. Green's different. It might just give him some juice because this is not a great matchup for West Virginia's offensive line. I'm not sure how many great matchups exist right now for the offensive line the way it's playing, but this run defense has some personnel, but also has some configurations in the way they line up and who they put where that can give them trouble. They can play the Virginia Tech style, which was, you know, put a guy right over the center, put a guy in the B gap. They're going to twist and stunt, which I can talk about. They can play even, they can play odd, and they have 6, 7, 8 defensive linemen that they'll play and keep them fresh.
Yeah, that's going to be a key point there. It's one of the things on my matchups is that Zach Frazier is going to have his hands full. This is, we talk about Neil Brown's most important game ever. How about Zach Frazier's most important game ever? Because he is going to be, you know, at center, he is the one that's got to be calling out certain blocking guys coming in, who's got what responsibilities. And Virginia Tech will switch from a 4-man front to a 3-man front. They rotate a ton. You go and look at those guys that play on the interior of the defensive line, and there's 4 of them mostly that are listed as defensive tackles or nose tackles on their depth chart. And their defense has played, I believe, is 144 snaps. And those guys have, so basically 280 total between the two positions. Those 4 guys are getting 60-some, 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 you know, 68, 67, 61, and 60. Like, they split it evenly. And those guys are always fresh, and they are relentless after the quarterback. You watch that game against UNC, and Howell was constantly under pressure, and it was coming right up the middle. So you're accustomed to that edge, that pass rush coming from the edges, and you're worried about your tackles being so young. But Tech loves to bring it right up the middle.
They have a great game they play, too. They'll line up odd or even. This typically works. I've seen it most out of an odd. That middle linebacker will dart around. And when he runs, he's going across the center. And he's going to cross his right to his left or his left to his right. And the center has to make a decision. And if he goofs up and doesn't do it, the nose guard or the defensive tackle, I'm sorry, is going to peel around and go right up the middle. They're very good at that. It's hard to explain unless you watch it, but just imagine you're 3 defensive linemen, and then the center is getting attacked by a middle linebacker, and that puts that center in conflict. So in this situation, we're talking about Zach Frazier, and he's got to figure out, okay, the center position I'm guarding is going to get attacked by this middle linebacker. Do I let him pass and hope my guard gets him? Do I slide out and hope that someone comes over and gets this defensive tackle who's now going to peel across and go right down the middle? They were good against Middle Tennessee and against North Carolina with that. That's kind of one of the things that, again, it's a carryover from Bud Foster. You think about stunts and twists, and they've done it for a long, long time. It looks familiar. I agree 100%. Guard, center guard for West Virginia is going to be very good. And by the way, they have good defensive ends, like fast defensive ends, the very destructive players. I shouldn't say destructive, but they get the job done there. And the one that just kind of stands out for them right now, whose name suddenly slipped my head, Taiwan Garbutt, is in the backfield a ton. And that's a defensive end that's going to be on Parker Moore, going to be on Brandon Yates, and they better be on him because he's just found his way around guys for some time now. Don't forget about the tackles there because the edge pressure is good. They're going to have to be able to pass protect. I understand that. I think that West Virginia believes it's doing a better pass protection job than a run blocking job, but boy, I don't really want Dagey throwing 50 passes in here. I'd like to be able to run, I don't know, for 150 yards. Is that too much to ask? Like, what do you think is a magic number and versus the, you know, a reasonable number for West Virginia?
So they're pass blocking better than run blocking. So I guess it's all relative. I mean, what's better than absolute crap? I guess it's the point of view here. I'm with you though. It would be nice if West Virginia could run. I just think it's going to be very difficult. I do. I think you're going to have to get tricky with it. Some misdirection, some counters, and I don't know. You did a little bit of that on with the screen share. Is that 2 weeks ago, right? About a little misdirection out of the backfield. But is that something West Virginia does a ton?
You know, they ran a lot of gap stuff in the first game and did okay with it. When I say a lot, I think they were just trying to change up inside zone, outside zone, because that's pretty much what West Virginia does. But they ran some gap stuff, which is, you know, counter plays and power plays. I'm not sure it was inside the 20s or if it was short yardage, but like they did it and they were getting about 5 or 6 yards a pop. I don't know what you can really take from the Long Island game, but what I do notice there is that they brought in some split zone stuff, which is something that they did early last year and didn't bring out very much. And that's just basically your tight end is coming across and blocking an unblocked defender. It's kind of a trap for the defender. He's going to be unblocked. He's going to commit and make a mistake. And all of a sudden he creates a gap because the tight end seals him off. I think you're going to have to do stuff like that. I'm not sure how much power and counter stuff they can do against this defensive line. We'll see. I'm not sure how much split zone stuff they can do against this defensive line. We'll see. But if they don't run inside zone and outside zone, I don't know what they're going to be able to do. That's what they do most. That's probably what they are practicing the most. It's been their staple for 2 years now, 1 year inside, 1 year outside. But they're going to have to create alleys for this. And so far during two games, it hasn't looked good. But, man, Letty Brown hasn't looked great either. He hasn't really gotten loose. And I think there's been times where there's been something and he hasn't gotten there. The trouble is that that something hasn't existed nearly enough. And I wonder to what extent that's kind of working against him a little bit. Again, I don't take a whole lot from LIU, except for the fact that they were getting blown backwards by Long Island's defense a couple of times. That's not encouraging. This is a much better defense on Long Island and probably Maryland too.
Yeah, I think one of the things I look at with Letty Brown, because it was 2 years ago, he was not breaking a lot of tackles. Like, that was the offensive line, to be fair to Letty Brown, has not been good any of these 3 years, period. Like, it's not, I won't have that debate. But in 2019, he averaged about 2.5 yards per carry. And then in 2020, it was up near 3. And for most of the season there, it was well above 3. So he had he was breaking tackles. He was making guys miss. And you're just not seeing that as much so far through the first two games. Now, small sample size, two games, wouldn't be overly concerned about it yet, but I think you're right. I think, you know, the offensive line, tons of issues again, which is something that needs to be addressed, but, you know, Letty Brown is not infallible here. This is on him.
I have a feeling he's going to be using the passing game a lot.
Yeah.
Screens, flick it out into the flat, have him line up as a receiver. We've heard about that. We've seen a little bit of that, but that could be something there too, because I just wonder if, and if they do, when they pull the plug in the running game. I just wonder if they get a look at it for a couple of drives, or I don't know, maybe a half, heck, maybe a quarter, I don't know. And they said, this isn't going to work. We're going to have to, you know, maybe play green, but also Day's going to have to pass it, you know, X number of times, or X makes you maybe uncomfortable. But that might be better than sacrificing a down or two downs, or doing something on third and short that you have a suspicion isn't going to work. And then this just kind of goes back to an old axiom, but you just don't want to do what the defense wants you to do. You don't want to do what the other team wants you to do. And I think if you're a West Virginia offensive coach right now, you probably are concerned that a handoff, even to a guy like Letty Brown, that's kind of a good thing for the defense. And if you get in a situation where they kind of feel relieved, then maybe they should just run away from that, which leads me to this. Pass defense is, it's got some soft spots, right?
Yeah, definitely over the middle. They got some really good outside corners, but over the middle in the slot, that's a spot where you can really, you know, kind of pick them apart. Talking about Maryland here, it's, I don't know. I mean, the numbers are part of, like, you know, a big trend. If you're winning, you're running more. If you're losing, you're passing more, typically, because you're trying to catch up. But looking back, you said what's the number X here for how many pass attempts you're looking for from West Virginia if they just bail on the running game? Mm-hmm. West Virginia record is not great. They have not won with Neil Brown in Morgantown when they throw 50 times or over 45 times. Oh, they have not won. And they are looking, even going down, dropping it down to 40. They got a couple wins, 5-7 with Neil Brown when they drop it down to 40. So that 40 to 45 range, they're pretty good. But anything above 45, it's not going to work.
Middle Tennessee got them on some wheel routes on the outside. They played some fun tunes with their slot receivers. And I don't know if that's because Tech's defensive backs are so aggressive that they're going to see something and go after it, or if it was just a fluke. But you could have watched that game and seen some like fake screens to an outside guy where the slot went north. They ran some wheel stuff where the slot kind of ran around some traffic, you know, pick plays, whatever you want to call it. But the slots are active. And if you're West Virginia, Sam James, Winston Wright have been your, we'll put Sean Ryan in here, but Sean Ryan plays outside. But Sam James, Winston Wright have been productive receivers so far. Wright's extremely fast. James is extremely fast. Those two, I think, have to have a big game. And I think they have to be focused on because there are ways you can manipulate those edges there on the perimeter. And then, as you mentioned, where they put their safety sometimes to help in the run, there's going to be space out wide. Those safeties are going to have a long way to run to either get to the ball or to recover, depending on where they start their alignment. But if you're running wheels, you're running those flags or those verts with your slot guys, there can be space there too, because those guys have been had before. Like if you watch the Middle Tennessee State game, some of the only success that they really had consistently was when they ran pumps or they ran wheels or something like that, that got those guys just a chance to get out wide. They're inside guys out wide. And as you mentioned, you know, their outside guys are really good. Guys have had some trouble so far.
One, I always enjoy it when I say something and your response is, "Ooh, really?" Yeah. The 45. Yes. West Virginia, when they throw 45 times or more in a game, have not won since November of 2017. And also, as you were talking right there, I was thinking earlier when I said, yeah, it's going to be a wild environment, it's going to be crazy. I thought, did I speak too soon? Are they really going to sell this out? Is it going to be full house? Just got the email. The game is officially sold out on Saturday. It will be a full house for the game against Virginia Tech.
Just absolutely inexcusable if it isn't.
Right. I agreed. And I was thinking, I just said it and then I was like, well, is it? Because it seems to me like it absolutely should, but it is.
What about my point about the slot receivers, though?
I think they're good. I think, you know, they got Chamari Corner, who's not a great corner. Have you made that joke already?
Well, it's Connor, so he's not a great corner.
Oh, right? No. Is it Connor?
Yes.
And I even wrote it down. I wrote it down wrong in my story. I wrote it down wrong on my notes, everything. He has not been great.
Double check. If you did all that right, maybe I did something wrong.
No. You're right, because I just pulled up text too deep, and I just wrote it down wrong the first time and continued to write it down wrong. He has not done well at the slot corner. He is typically the guy. He's listed as the starting nickel. He is typically the guy that lines up covering the slot. Middle Tennessee did some things where I didn't see
him.
They picked on him. They picked on him a lot. And then they also, whatever it was, five wide, whatever the look that they gave Virginia Tech, they also drew down bandit safety Nasir Peoples, who has lined up in a few different spots, but typically is back deep. And they pulled him down in the box more and pulled him in to cover some slot as well. And they ate him alive too on limited action. But, you know, he hasn't been in coverage, man coverage that much. But when he has, he's not been good. I believe he was allowed six catches on seven attempts for 80 some yards. Mm-hmm. So those are two guys that are going to typically cover your slot receivers and cover the middle of the field. And neither has been very good so far this year, like actually been quite bad, while the outside corners have been quite good. So it's one of those situations where it's why go after the guys who are great corners and might be playing in the NFL one day when you have these two weak spots, both in the interior.
Yeah, Waller's really good. I'm not sure what side he'll play and who he'll draw. I think he's moved around a little bit, but it would make sense to me to put him on Sean Ryan, I would think. But he might be a guy who runs to Bryce Ford-Wheaton. Ford-Wheaton had a pretty good start last game. I think I undersold that maybe a little bit. I wasn't maybe impressed by the end of the game because so many things had happened or not happened. But he had a pretty good start. I think that's encouraging. I'm smart enough to point out that they had some issues on intermediate stuff on the outside. You look at the numbers, they absolutely did. I would imagine that West Virginia's offensive coaches are just as smart, hopefully smarter. Which makes me think that like Tech's going to be like, all right, how do we not have this happen again? Because West Virginia's skill was probably a little bit better. Their quarterback play is perhaps a little bit better than Middle Tennessee's. And then maybe West Virginia zags and says, all right, we're going to stretch it. We're going to try to hit Wheaton deep. We're going to try to hit Sean Ryan deep. Sean Ryan's looked good. I don't know what's gotten into him. He had some explanations for just growing up and being more mature and finally realizing what it's like to practice and prepare. seems like it's working. He might be your go-to guy there. So I think our point here, Chris, in a roundabout way, is that they're going to have to pass the ball to be effective here.
Yeah, they are. And like with every team, there are certain weaknesses, certain strengths. And I feel like with Virginia Tech, though, that it's pretty obvious on both sides of the ball what they do well and what they don't do well. And it's really going to come down to a matter of kind of who can game plan against it. Because picking apart Virginia Tech through the air, yeah, it's the place to attack them is through the middle and maybe even deep towards those safeties. But West Virginia's not great at that. They're not too great. I mean, Dagey does all right when he throws over the middle, those quick slants, different things like that between the numbers. But it's going to be a matter of who can game plan this up, who can scheme this up and attack those spots. Because if it's obvious to us, it's obvious to the coaches, and it's obvious to Virginia Tech, and they're going to try to make West Virginia do something else.
A little double pass. What do you think? Reese Smith can throw it.
I guess. Yeah, I knew. You started talking, and I was having flashbacks to last year when you started talking about two quarterbacks, because that was your thing last year. Let's get two quarterbacks on the field. Little Garrett Green, little Austin Kendall in the slot. Oh. Throw it out there. I know that was your thing last year.
Well, don't forget that in 20 what year was 20? God, it was Howard, William Crest, and I want to say McCoy lined up in the same backfield, and then it was a replay where they went left to right. The handoff went to Crest and Crest threw it. That was Dana mad science phase. I understand, but like, there's no way that's happening. We're not that lucky, but like my point back then was that there's a way you can do it. And if you're going to play two quarterbacks, don't put one out wide. Don't put them in the backfield together. That's the way to go. That's what I think. Like, are you going to throw a pass out wide to Jarrett Dagey and let him throw it? No way. Maybe you could sneak Garrett Green in the field and do it. The fans might tip you off there. But once you see that quarterback outside, you know something's up. I would put them both in the backfield. There's no way I'm doing it against Virginia Tech. I might do it in a spring game. Might. But we saw it against Baylor a couple years ago. I think it's crazy enough to be a conversation if you're in dire straits. I'm not sure West Virginia's quite there yet, though.
Are they not?
Okay, now I'm thinking about it, actually. This is a great idea. We haven't talked about the third side of the ball here, Chris. And you have to if you're playing Virginia Tech. For a long, 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 long time, it was Beamer ball. And they just did so many things, and they were really good at it. Every year, it seemed like blocking field goals, blocking punts, returning kickoffs, returning punts. Staff different, even though that there is some, let's say, Bud Foster-esque defense. And I think one of his former players is actually the defensive coordinator now, so that actually does make some sense. But son of a gun, they happen to have one of the best special teams coaches in the country again, in James Shivest. Won some awards from his peers or whatever, and they're really good at it. They don't block a ton of stuff anymore. They just get a lot of returns. But are you in fear of a blocked punt or a kickoff return or something that just makes you go, oh, it's Tech, they're back in the schedule, of course this happened?
I'm going to say yes and no here, because yes, I'm concerned about it, but not because it's Tech, but because I've seen West Virginia special teams over the last couple of years, which have been, as a quick aside, marketably better this year, I feel like. But punting has been meh. Field goal kicking looks a little suspect. Last couple of years, they have not been making kicks at the rate at which you'd like to see, below average in college football, rotating around to different kickers, different punters over and over and over again. I think the return game is obviously great with Winston Wright, but if West Virginia ends up getting a field goal blocked or a punt blocked, I don't know how quick I would be to credit Virginia Tech, as I would be thinking, well, saw that one coming. It was a ticking time bomb there. So yes and no to your question.
So Winston Wright's bailed them out a couple times already this year. I'm not sure they needed his heroics against Long Island, but the touchdown counted. The game was over before it really even started. So he's done that. And then, you know, set him up for a touchdown and set him up for a red zone possession at least. So you think, all right, it's almost like an offensive play right now. A kickoff with Winston Wright is something that should be lucrative. Should get you in one handle a couple of first downs, like two, three. He's going to go 20, 30 yards. Have you seen the stats on Tech's kick return defense?
Yeah, in your story, but I'll let you take it from there.
It's incredible. They haven't allowed a 30-yard return since 2018. 2018. It's like that. Sometimes that just happens. Like one guy makes a play or one guy's out of his lane, and they kicked off a ton. How often have they kicked off? They have 396 kickoffs the last couple of years. Now, some of them have gone out of bounds. Some have been onside. So 380 are returnable since 2016, which is when the coaching change took place and Shibas came in. I'm not sure. I know enough about him to know he's good. So they've had 380 returnable kicks since the start of the 2016 season. 294 have been touchbacks. They're not even going to let Winston Wright get this ball. It would be criminal to let Wright get a chance because, again, that's one of their best offensive plays now is a kickoff return. Take it away from him. Boot that thing to the end zone. Can they do it? Different kicker this year right now. They're 5 of 10, so that ratio is off a little bit. I would think if Wright gets it, he's got to give it a chance because he might not get many. But then again, they haven't had a return longer than 33 yards since 2018. Wright's averaging 51. I'm not sure that 51 is ever going to keep up, but you'd like to take your chances. But they just happen to be schematically very good at it. Continuity with their coaching. I was blown away by that. I was just thinking, all right, there's our chance in the special teams battle. You know, Tech's going to do Tech things. I know they have a good coach, but West Virginia is elite. I mean, I would say even last year, the results weren't there. They did block it well, but somebody who wins that battle there is going to have a significant win. If West Virginia can get field position against the defense or get some big plays or set up scores, that's huge. And if Tech takes it away, and again, West Virginia's most productive offensive play isn't there, that's important too. I know it's a small thing. I know I fixate on special teams sometimes too, but that's the reality here. Like this is a kind of a significant thing because that's juice for the offense and the crowd, and it can be deflating too.
So the title to your story says, will the Hokies give him a chance being right?
Mm-hmm.
My answer, it doesn't matter because Wright's going to make a chance. Did you see him take out that 90-yarder, 97-yarder against Maryland? He was like 8 yards deep in the end zone, six yards deep. Yeah. So I think if they're really going to get a touchback, they're going to have to literally kick it out of the end zone because I think he is going to try to run with anything that he can get his hands on. Because for good and bad, we saw it with that punt return that he fumbled against Maryland as well. That was my point to somebody when a fan tweeted at me that he had to get out of the game. I said, that's the good and bad of what Wright's doing. If he were to fair catch when he's quote unquote supposed to fair catch, yeah, he doesn't fumble that ball, but he also doesn't have that 97-yard kickoff return. Mm-hmm. So you're getting the good and the bad. And I think at this rate, you got to just roll the dice and tell Wright to take it out whenever he wants to take it out. So unless Tech is kicking it out of the back of the end zone, I think Wright's going to try to break it out.
I'm with you. I'd encourage it. If it's, again, if my feet aren't on the back line, do it. Heck, go Dan Orlovsky. Have your foot out of the end zone if you want to, but just take it out because that's one of your best things. And he's earned that right. But again, so is the scheme. They really like what they're doing. And you can watch it too. Like the big returns and even the ones where he's gotten tripped up, they've had an alley. Something has worked. I don't know if they're guessing right or if it's just one of those things where no matter what the other team does, you can shift and do it. That's typically what happens a lot of times in this. So again, if it's one of the best things that you do, don't let it come out of your hands. Don't let the other team do what you want them to do. And if it means, all right, let's do touchbacks, let's kick it 8 yards deep, heck no. Take first and 10 at the 20 instead of first and 10 at the 25 or whatever, but he should be able to get out there and do something. And again, that's a juice play for the offense and the crowd. And I know Neil Brown likes his juice. Anything else here, Chris, we haven't covered?
No, I think we got offense, defense, special teams, kickoffs, everything. I think we got it covered here.
Do you think Colton McGee's the kicker for kickoffs, or do you think it's Evan Staley?
You know what? I found it not odd, but I feel like it was telling that Neil Brown went out of his way to give kudos to Colton McGee in that situation. So it would not surprise me if he was out there doing kickoffs on Saturday.
Might give Staley one spin. I'm not sure beyond that because I think he was 3 for 3 on touchbacks, speaking of McGee, and kind of important. Caleb King is a good return guy, one of their running backs. He's speedy. He does some things. And punting ought to be good, too. They have weapons. I mentioned him earlier. There's a chance that there's always a chance when it comes to West Virginia's special teams. I said the longest time, the knock on it was that something just couldn't happen. There had to be an event attached to it. And, boy, I'm sure they hope that is not the case because I expect this to be a close game. And it could be tilted by, field position. It could be tilted by a big splash play in special teams. Could be penalties. Could be turnovers. I just think that it's going to be probably a close game. I know the line looks weird, but I can't see this being something where it would start off with one team, two field goals or a touchdown favored. And to be honest, if it's close and it's within a touchdown or a field goal late, that would not surprise me at all. It just seems like that's how this is gearing up. I know strengths and weaknesses exist that we've talked about. I don't think there's a huge gap between one team's strength and the other team's weakness. I think they both have ways around it or have counters they can make due to personnel and versatility. Just Tech happens to have that one in the five next to their name and really owns one of the best wins of the season so far, but had a whole lot of time to prepare for that one. Played a tough game last week and kind of went into halftime 14-7, scored a bunch in the second half and coasted, but that wasn't Long Island. West Virginia's fresh. I'm sure they spent some time last week prepping on Virginia Tech. I just don't see a lot of gaps here. I don't see one team running away from the other.
I don't either. I think in my preview that I gave for the Virginia Tech site, I said this seems like a game where either team thinks that they're going to win 21-17 or 24-21, something like that. And what's crazy is, you know, we keep talking about how, oh my God, I can't believe West Virginia was favored by three. And you know what? They were favored by three. And according to the stats, according to, pull it up here, the money split, you know, Vegas always wants it 50-50, so they make money no matter what. 51-49.
Oh, man.
Is the money. So, like, even though it seems nuts to, you know, the people that are on our board and people talking, the general public and the big bettors are even on this. That seems like it's the proper line. The one that's making me laugh, the under, even though it is very low at 50.5, under 75% of the money on the under still.
Mm. So they're thinking 20, like
24-21, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Man. Shoot.
Again, it wouldn't surprise me. I think it's going to be close.
Yeah.
What would have to happen for a shootout?
I think there would have to be a Winston Wright kickoff return. Blackshear is going to end up with 200 yards of like screen plays and zone runs that end up breaking outside. And I don't know. Like it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where it ends up with, you know, so many points, because I think both teams' strengths and the weaknesses on the opposing defenses are just inviting for those underneath short passes that will kind of, you know, lead to chunk yard, not big plays, big, you know, 80-yard touchdowns and quick turnovers and stuff like that. So, man, I can see why people think it's still going under. And I do. I think I said 21-17 for my final score, something like that.
Interesting. All right, last one we'll go here. Without giving away a prediction or picking a team or anything like that, something, someone that you'll be talking about that determined the outcome of this game, one on West Virginia's side, one on Tech's side. I can go first.
Yeah, go for it.
A running game, offensive line for West Virginia. I think that's going to have its fingerprints all over the final score. And then the play of Burmeister, a quarterback. If he's good, they'll probably have an easier time than if he's not. And if he's not good, then he probably succumbed to some of West Virginia's designs on defense there. That might be too simple, but it's obvious. I think those are probably pillars of either team's plan.
And, I mean, if we're not going with the quarterback for West Virginia, which I think would be too easy, I'm going with Zach Frazier. I think it's just so important for that offensive line. I mean, as a whole, like the whole interior of the offensive line, really, for West Virginia. And then on the other side, it's Blackshear. With Mitchell gone, that takes away one of their kind of safety nets in that passing game. And even as a running back, he gets out of the backfield and he can catch it. And he always seems to be catching it in the right motion, almost like he's playing Canadian Football League, you know, where you can start in motion running towards the line of scrimmage, which you can't do in college or the NFL. And he's moving forward and he's getting yards. So I think he is somebody that if they can get the ball to him in space, if Virginia Tech wins, I think it's going to be a situation where Blackshear ends up with like 200 yards from scrimmage.
I like it. Not a lot of time left until we kick this off. Plenty left to do on the website. I will have a look at the offensive line and Sean Ryan come back Friday morning with the fresh set focused on physical play for West Virginia. Hey, I have to have it in a rivalry. And then, of course, many other things about the game by the numbers later in the day. Chris, I'll work backwards. I know you'll have your three matchups before the game. What else fills the gap between then and now?
Yeah, I've got expert picks, bowl projections, the three key matchups I was going to do Saturday morning. I know we mentioned before that if there was a noon game, I might move it to Friday. We'll kind of see, feel things out, because there's a lot of stuff we got, a lot of preview stuff, a lot of information, a lot of stuff for everybody to digest, and we want to make sure that it's all up there for you to read in plenty of time before the game. So it'll be up, just not sure Friday or Saturday. It's done, so we'll see.
It's a great idea putting it on Friday, Chris. Where'd you get that? Hey, are we too good or too popular? I can't figure out. One's maybe because we have an audience. One's maybe because we drew in the audience. I don't know. I feel like our previews are providential. They tell the future a little bit, but man, they're kind of quintessential as well.
Yep. Necessary press box reading.
You got me there. Until next time, I'm Mike Casaza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
Dang, good one. See ya.